Welcome to the program for Friday, February 17th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. Every week at this time, I have two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the most important for the week to people who work for the federal government. They rank them in order from number three to number one, and they come in and count them down with me in the studio on the Federal News Countdown. This week, it is Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson and Associates and former OPM official, long career in the federal government and HR. It's great to see you again, Diane. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And my colleague, Julia Ziegler, is also on the countdown this week, and you are the web manager at federalnewsradio.com, and
yes.
It's appropriate that Diane is here because of the story that the series that you've been working on. I really enjoyed playing the materials, the audio materials you've provided for the Managing Morale series. And, of course, that's on the countdown this week, coincidentally. So it's great that you're here. We'll start, as we always do, with
number three.
Diane Cochran's third most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is SBA Redefinition of Small Business Draws Mixed Reactions. Were you surprised that that this happened, first of all, and secondly, that people reacted the way they did?
No to both counts. We've been watching this for a very long time. The commentary period in the Federal Register commentary has been out for well over a year, and we've been watching it very closely. The federal government's push on small business awards in the acquisition world is legendary. We know that small businesses are frequently on small business set-asides,
mm-hmm.
and since probably over 30 years, the small business thresholds haven't been raised. Not realistic in this day and age to have a business that has a revenue of $20 million a year competing with a business that has a revenue of a couple billion dollars a year for government work.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've seen, particularly, Francis, and really this is all about the economy. Everything we're talking about is about the economy, and what we've seen over the last couple of years are an increasing number of small business set-asides for contract work. And as a former executive in the government, I was always made aware of my small business goals and obligations in my agency.
Mm-hmm.
And now as on the other side, on the commercial side, as a soon-to-be small business under the new threshold, we're very, very thrilled to see this because of 30 years of one revenue level just isn't keeping up with the ability for small businesses and smaller businesses in the large category to compete for government work.
Now, what you say about a $20 million company competing with a billion-dollar company, that makes sense. But we may have a scenario here now where we have a $20 million company competing with a million-dollar company where the million-dollar company might not have had to do that before.
For the most part, most of the NAICS codes have a threshold now of $14 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's up from seven. There's a few that are different, but for the most part, the services the government buys, the threshold for small business now is $14 million. And that's good news for agencies who are struggling to find small businesses to provide the services they're trying to sell. And it just widens the range of possibilities. I think they said over 8,300 businesses now will go into the small business category. I think that's very good news in this economy for businesses that are entrepreneurial and trying to make their way into government. And
mm-hmm.
it just gives the government more choices and the ability to actually employ more small businesses.
Guy Timberlake from the American Small Business Coalition, though, was on the show earlier this week and making that case that some of his members are saying, I'm going to compete against companies I didn't have to before, and it's going to make it a lot more difficult for me. Some of the folks at the smaller end of the scale.
And you've got a great number of companies that were in the, you know, small end of the big business that were just getting shut out altogether,
mm-hmm.
because they couldn't compete with the $2 billion companies for the kind of work, and they just, you know, were categories as large businesses. So
yeah.
I personally think this is a great thing, not only because Kelly Anderson is now going to become a small business on March 12th in many of its offerings, but it also gives the government a lot more choices on small business set-asides.
Diane Cochran's third most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is SBA Redefinition of Small Business Draws Mixed Reactions. And you can find that linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Julia Ziegler's third most important federal news story is by Julia Ziegler That's nicely done.
You know, you guys have been joking with me about this, but...
The headline is Federal Morale Deeply Impacted by Pay Freeze and Fed Bashing, and it's one of the pieces of your Managing Morale series, which, as I said before, is extremely well done.
Thank you. Yeah, and I did not just choose it because I put together this series, but I, you know, one of the reasons that I did choose it was because this series, the three main articles in the series that I wrote, have been extremely popular on our website all week. And what that tells me is that what I've been writing is resonating with federal employees. And, you know, the reason we did this entire series to begin with is because federal employees have been dealing with a lot in the last few years, and they're frustrated. And we kind of saw that anecdotally and heard that anecdotally, but we really wanted to find out if it was true. So we started by conducting this survey, and we got over 1,700 responses, and overwhelmingly, the federal employees and federal managers who responded said that their morale is just down in the dumps. They're not happy, and the three biggest reasons that they gave were the pay freeze, mm-hmm. Ineffective managers, and... what was my third one? And Fed bashing mm-hmm. from Congress and members of the public. So I think that, you know, that goes along with just everything that we're going to be talking about today. Mm-hmm. Like Diane said, this all goes back to the economy, money.
The survey that you did mm-hmm. asking employees and managers to rate their morale on a scale of 1 to 10, I thought was the most telling in all of yeah. this material that you have. Because you asked them to rank their own morale on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 extremely high, 1 extremely low. If you use 5 as the midpoint,
right.
between 1 and 5, 65% of the managers put themselves there, and yep. 69% of employees put themselves there. That is pretty stinky.
It is. It is. And, you know, the thing is, when you look at the numbers and you go into, you then get into the whole issue of how well our managers able to motivate their employees, mm-hmm. the numbers are also very low. And it makes sense, right? If the managers themselves aren't motivated, how can they motivate their workforces?
We have all of the details on our series at federalnewsradio.com, and the issues here kind of permeate the stories on the countdown this yeah. week because of all of the things that are going on in Congress and so on. You'll hear all about that throughout the course of the Federal News Countdown this week. Julia Ziegler's third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Federal Morale Deeply Impacted by Pay Freeze and Fed Bashing. And it's linked up, like all of our countdown stories, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Julia Ziegler and Diane Cochran on the countdown this week. Their second most important federal news stories when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Agencies don't seem as gung-ho on telework as the White House or lawmakers would have it. Maryland Congressman John Sarbanes and Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly sponsored the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010. They recently asked the Congressional Research Service to find out how agencies are applying the law. Turns out the Department of Veterans Affairs allows just 12% of its employees to telework. Elsewhere, many feds keep going to the office even when they have permission to work from home.
The beginning of another year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WAPA, a nonprofit association, provides a free online protection quiz and needs analysis worksheet to help you determine if your family has the right amount of life insurance coverage. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
The 2012 Leukemia Ball toasts 25 years of making a difference on Saturday, March 31st at the Washington Convention Center. For its silver anniversary, the 2012 Leukemia Ball will feature performances by legendary classic rock band Foreigner and comedian Sinbad, along with dinner, dancing, the Mercedes-Benz raffle, and a world-class silent auction with travel packages from American Airlines. There are more than 19,000 people in the D.C. metro region living with leukemia, lymphoma, or myeloma. Help the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society cure blood cancer by attending the area's largest one-night non-political black tie gala. They're celebrating 25 years of service, and you're invited.
To purchase a ticket, please call 703-399-2900, 703-399-2900, or visit www.leukemiaball.org. You don't want to miss this great event.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. It's the Federal Drive IG Day. We'll have a return visit from David Kotz, the former SEC Inspector General. He'll discuss why so many IG positions are vacant. And GSA's IG Brian Miller tells us what it takes to be an effective Inspector General. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes Diane Cochran from Kelly Anderson and my Federal News Radio colleague Julia Ziegler choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week, and we're up to
number two.
And Julia Ziegler's second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Our Jack Moore writing under the headline, 2013 budget, staffing levels remain mostly flat. This was a terrific breakdown, and I was really pleased to plug this on the air earlier in the week because this is exactly the kind of resource that people look for all the time. And God help you if you've ever looked at a budget document, finding these numbers is, yeah, it's really, Diane's making this thing with her hands where they're about 6 inches apart.
Right.
And it's just, it's really not easy. So kudos to Jack and the team on the web desk that went through and put all this information together. I was struck by the fact that there weren't more agency shrinking, though, than there actually were. The headline is correct. And the fact that overall staffing stays about the same, I was a little surprised by.
Staffing stays about the same, and you know what? When you look at the overall budget numbers, 11 agencies see a little bit of an increase when it comes to the discretionary numbers. 11 agencies go down. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the overall theme here that we're seeing in the budget. And as all of we all know, you know, and as feds know, it's these initial numbers from the president aren't really that important. All of this is going to change. We know that. And that feeds into what we were talking about earlier and what we're going to talk about coming up here is that there's so much going on in Congress that I think that's why the budget story is important, because we can take a look at this benchmark now, what the president wants, and say to ourselves, well, where are we going to be when the budget is actually finalized.
Mm-hmm. What I was surprised, when we think about all of the things that are going on at OPM, retirement backlog, your old agency, Diane, still working on the retirement backlog and all of the other issues that are going on, OPM takes one of the biggest hits, if not the biggest one, maybe.
I think it's the biggest
in
one.
In this proposal, 7%, 5,300 jobs in the 2013 estimate, 5,700 jobs in fiscal 2012. Losing 400 of an agency that's only in the mid-5,000s is a little bit surprising to me.
It is surprising, but then again, when you think about how OPM has positioned itself over the last decade to transfer more and more of the authorities and responsibilities to agencies, to pick up, it may not be quite as surprising. And where those 400 are, I could only speculate. But most agency budgets don't live by FTE counts. They live by how much money they're spending.
Mm-hmm.
So they will build in lapse time and freezes and, you know, hiring that's kind of staggered. So they may not see that right off the bat. They also may be looking at a large number of retirements because many people at OPM have been there since the beginning of their careers.
Uh-huh.
And we're at that point now where we have the CSRS people coming up, the last of the CSRS people coming up on retirement. So I don't get too concerned about that because it probably will be a staggered attrition.
Mm-hmm.
They will live with their budget numbers, but their numbers, their actual FTE numbers will fluctuate like in any agency when they manage their budget.
Do you see anything else in this list, Diane, that surprised you?
Well, SEC, their increase, which I've had some personal experience with lately, and how much they're increasing, which again...
Have you been accused of some kind of fraud or something?
No, but I've been watching their attempts to hire
folks. Just teasing.
And I think, again, that goes to the economy and the economy driving that kind of, you know, oversight right now. So, I think it's not surprising. What will be surprising is if the budget passes.
Well, and I also think, you know, how these projected cuts in staffing levels actually come about. Is it going to be something, again, that perhaps comes from Congress, too?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we going to see there's a ton of bills out there. By my count, we've got a pay and benefits tracker on federalnewsradio.com right now. Over 18 bills in Congress right now that affect pay, benefits, staffing levels, all of those kinds of things. And so I think it'll be interesting to see, if Congress passes some kind of legislation that agencies are going to have to abide by when it comes to staffing levels.
If I look at this chart and I toss out some of the high gains and high cuts and just one or two of each, most of them pretty much fall in the 1% to 2%. Mm-hmm. And I think, Diane,
that could be attrition.
I was just going to say, you can confirm that just might be standard churn
that you see in agencies.
Yeah.
What
do we think about the possibility that Congress might mess with these numbers in some way or another?
I doubt it.
Really?
I seriously doubt it. I think what they're looking at is the bottom line budget numbers,
mm-hmm.
the money expended. I don't think Congress will actually go in and count the number of employees in an agency.
Even in an environment like we have now, politically, where there are so many members that are just, by gosh, we're going to cut the government no matter how we have to do it.
Well, it's the cost. It's all about the money, and there's ways to do that without actually counting the numbers. And my number two story, we'll kind of talk about that a little
okay.
bit. But again,
nice tease, by the way.
Yeah, hiring lapse helps meet the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And on any given day, you're going to get a number that's different than the next day. So tracking FTEs has never been an effective way to manage a budget in an agency.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that it makes it, you know, one of the bills out there right now is the U-Cut bill, and that's this whole idea that, you know, if three people leave government, you only hire two
right.
back.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on that kind of legislation in order, you know, when it's in the context of trying to lower the deficit?
And it is about the money you're expending. So that's
right.
what they're trying to do. They're never going to sit back and count how many people you've hired. They're going to see how much you've spent.
Mm-hmm.
And have you met that threshold of expenditure? So this has been done before. It's been done many years in the past. It'll pass. This too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it's about managing the expenditures and the budget.
It's interesting that you say that you think that this will pass, that we'll get past this, because there are a lot of folks that are starting to believe, not so many at the agencies yet, I don't think, but a lot of folks that are starting to think this is how we're going to do business from here on out. And if that's the case, that's at least something that I think should be on the radar screens of people in the agencies, that this may not The attitude, at least, may not pass.
I'll tell you a story that a lot of people have lived through, and that would be the old A76 initiatives,
mm-hmm.
where the idea was to cut the number of federal employees and do the work more efficiently with contract employees if it was, you know, the most beneficial to the government. Over the years, study after study has shown that the cost has not decreased. Mm-hmm. It's escalated when you have privatization of certain functions. So, again, it's how you track the budget that really is the key.
Well, and with the A76s, I think the numbers like 60-some or 70-some percent of those competitions have been won by federal employees.
They have, because they cut their numbers so severely.
Yeah.
Consequently, many of those areas have not been able to deliver on the mission.
Hmm.
Which is, you know, part of the problem that we have now with the government not being effective.
Well, and that's one of the questions that I asked some of these congressmen that I interviewed was, you know, if you cut the number of people that you have working at any given agency, at some point, something's got to give. At some point, either the mission suffers or, you know, something else is going to suffer. So how do you do more with less?
Yeah.
You never do.
Well, and Diane, that's part of the broader conversation. We don't go into politics very often, but it seems to me, and I've talked about this a lot on the show, I've not understood yet why members of the administration have not gone to the Hill. Maybe they will with this budget request now and say, all right, we understand we're not going to get as much money and we're not going to have as many people. So what parts of our mission that we're doing now would you, Mr. or Ms. Chairman, be okay with us no longer doing to fit this new business model that we're working under? I've been surprised that nobody's really done that yet.
That exercise has gone on in the agencies.
But they haven't taken it to the Hill yet, I don't think.
And a lot of the you know, the congressmen and the people and the folks representing the various districts say, nope, you're not doing that. You're not cutting that office. You're not cutting that office. So it's not in my backyard, the NIMBY effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I will tell you that every agency I've been in has been asked to do that analysis. What can you not do? What will you not be able to do mm-hmm. if we cut this many people and this much money?
And maybe it's a more effective approach to the Hill to say, here's our ideas mm-hmm. about what we won't do anymore. Tell us what you think of these. I don't know. What do you think?
It probably would fall on deaf ears. No one wants to cut an entitlement, a service, or a benefit anywhere. But they want you to do it with less people. And it never works that way.
Julia Ziegler's second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. It's the headline is Staffing Levels Remain Mostly Flat in the 2013 Budget. And you can read it and all of our budget resources at federalnewsradio.com. Search term budget. When we come back on the countdown, Diane Cochran's second most important federal news story of the week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Armor Your Home Security System gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Max out your privacy settings on social networks. Restrict as much as you can what people can see of you. Close all your old accounts. Chances are it's got an email that you've reused. They could guess the maiden name of your mother or your first pet or something.
Yeah.
A lot of the celebrities whose email accounts were hacked, their challenge question was something that you could look up on the Internet.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Interior Department will take another stab at moving its entire workforce to the cloud. Its last attempt last year got tangled up in a bid protest. A new request for proposals calls for secure cloud-based email, calendaring, instant messaging, video conferencing, and other collaboration tools. And Interior is planning a quick turnaround. The RFP calls for every mailbox in the department to be moved to the new service by December of this year. The department plans to award a contract by April 30th.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it,
and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Minding Meals Out. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, people eat lots of meals out, and when they eat out, they tend to eat lots. So researcher Gail Timmerman of the University of Texas at Austin has been looking at ways in which people can eat out without letting their calories get away from them. She worked with 35 women ages 40 to 59 in a six-week program aimed at paying attention to ways to control eating and cues that trigger eating.
In addition to the mindful eating where people are slowing down and really appreciating the food, there's also mindfulness based meditations where they're really looking at more their body cues, their hunger and fullness cues.
The study was aimed at preventing gains, but the women lost some weight. The study in the Journal of Nutrition, Education, and Behavior was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is Arena Stage. Join Arena Stage Artistic Director Molly Smith and Gala Chair WUSA9's J.C. Hayward at the Golden Gala on Monday, March 26, featuring Broadway sensation Kate Baldwin and honoring Senators Thad Cochran and Patrick Leahy. This enchanted evening of dining, dancing, and entertainment benefits arts education programs at Arena Stage. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Community Spotlight is brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by my colleague at Federal News Radio, Julia Ziegler, and by Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson. And Diane, your second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is OPM Plan: Older Employees Could Work Part-Time, Earn Part-Time Annuity. Now, this has been something. Why are you laughing?
This is a resurrection of the same old thing that's been tried before. And I'm laughing because of the title. I wish they had said senior federal employees instead of older federal employees.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, this is interesting to me on so many levels because this issue has been around for a very long time. There's several ways a federal employee can continue to work into retirement. There's the dual compensation waiver that you can go to back to work full time for a period of time on a critical mission need and receive your full pension benefits. And those have to be approved by OPM, and they're pretty hard to get approved.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, the National Defense Authorization Act included a provision for retired feds to go back to work essentially on a half-time basis and collect their full annuity. And that has been, I think, not used to the extent it is intended to use. And it was also intended for the same exact reason this particular proposed legislation is: succession planning, knowledge transfer,
mm-hmm.
not losing your expertise when these people walk out the door. And coincidentally, we saw a 25%, almost 25% raise in retirements in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be part of the administration's recognition that we're having people walk out that we don't need to have walk out, and let's incentivize them to stay.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough on this, you can get a partial annuity and work part-time. Why would you do that if already you can come back as a half-time employee and collect your full benefit?
You mentioned that this has been tried or discussed before.
Yeah.
Why didn't it work, and why do we have to do it again? Theoretically,
yeah,
at least.
And I surmise in 2010 it was for the same reason. But when I was at OPM from 2006 to 2008, this was proposed too as a phased retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shot down immediately by the unions because the unions felt that jobs would not be available to their members because the senior feds would continue to hold those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the proposed 2010 legislation that came into being on letting them come back half time and keep their full pension benefit was also proposed back in 2007 or 2008, and it was shot down for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen, I don't have the specific numbers, but we've seen that this provision hasn't been very extensively used. I would think it'd be very attractive for agencies to hire back a really seasoned mm-hmm. engineer or seasoned professional who's got a lot of corporate expertise and say come back on a half-time basis with no reduction in your benefit. What's going to draw them to do this?
Well, this seems to me to be a fit for what Director Barry's talked about trying to bring people back to process retirement claims.
Well,
with the backlog that they have there, it seems to fit that.
When you can bring them back half time with no reduction in, this really saves the government more money because it reduces the benefit, the pension benefit, mm-hmm. and they're earning half their salary. So this is, again, it goes back to the economy. This is a cheaper alternative to keep some of that corporate knowledge in the government for a little bit longer. What it doesn't necessarily do is reduce the numbers that the agency has paid, but it does reduce the amount of money because you're paying them half their salary, and the retirement benefits come out of a different pool.
So you're saying that this is not as good a deal as what's already available.
Not for me as a retired employee.
Exactly. That's where I'm headed.
It's a better deal for the agency because it's cheaper for them.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that many people are going to take advantage of that when the other option is available.
Well, could that be part of the premise of this, though, is that maybe agencies will offer this more and not offer the other opportunity
as much?
They
could, because it will cost them less money.
Yeah.
They could. And if I'm not necessarily ready to quit working and I want to, you know, phase in, this could be attractive. But, I you know, the other hasn't taken off all that well either, so I'm interested in this to see how this goes.
I'm kind of interested also to know, you know, when we're talking about retirements, do we think now is really going to be a time where more people are retiring, or are they still going to hold off? You know, we thought that retirement tsunami was going to come, and it didn't. But now I feel like there's some more anecdotal evidence out there that we are going to see more retirements coming down the road. One of the questions we asked people in my survey as well was, do you know of anybody in your agency who has left the government or retired due to morale problems in the last few years? 78% of managers said yes. Over 70% of federal employees said yes. So I'm wondering if that tide is changing, and wondering if you're hearing the same thing or thinking the same thing.
I think we did see a 24% increase in retirements in 2011. That was a big surprise, I think, to folks, because we thought, oh, the pay freeze isn't going to really affect folks that much, and the Fed bashing isn't going to, but it did. So we'll see what 2012 brings. This is intended, according to the way it's written, for succession planning, knowledge transfer, to kind of pass on the expertise. Let's hope that if they use this, that's exactly what they use it for, because if only 2% of college graduates want to work for the federal government these days, how can we lose 20%, 25% more people and still build the pipeline and keep the government going with good working feds?
Diane Cochran's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is, older employees could work part-time, earn part-time annuity. And it's posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, just like all the stories on the countdown. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Diane and by my colleague Julia Ziegler when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today. What is causing low morale at your agency, and what can managers do to fix it? Tune in for our special report, Managing Morale, Fixing the Problems Plaguing Your Federal Office, all this week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. See the results of our exclusive survey and hear what Congress expects of feds during these tough budget times. Plus, OPM Director John Barry tells us how he motivates employees. Find it at federalnewsradio.com, search term morale.
What is causing low morale at your agency, and what can managers do to fix it? Tune in for our special report, Managing Morale, Fixing the Problems Plaguing Your Federal Office, all this week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. See the results of our exclusive survey and hear what Congress expects of feds during these tough budget times. Plus, OPM Director John Berry tells us how he motivates employees. Find it at federalnewsradio.com, search term morale.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown every week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week, my experts are my colleague, Julia Ziegler, the president of the web, is what I like to call you, at federalnewsradio.com. You like that?
I do.
Web president?
I do.
And she is in here with the stories that she's chosen, and Diane Cochran of Kelly Anderson is here with the stories that she has chosen, and we're up to...
Number one!
And a demonstration that great minds think alike. You've each chosen pretty much the same story. Julie, your take is the federalnewsradio.com story headline, New Fed's Pension Contributions Increase Under Payroll Tax Cut Deal. And Diane, your story is from GovExec. The headline is Pension Changes Could Be Part of Payroll Deal. And, of course, we know now that that is the case. Mm-hmm. Now, my theory about this, and I talked to Diane a little bit about it before the show started, Julie, is that based on what we see here, and in Julie Lee's story talks about Senator Cardin and Congressman Van Hollen getting in this at the last minute and saying, nope, not on existing, not on people who currently work for the federal government. My theory is that that's what we're going to see a lot more of, and that maybe a year from now, that very few of these things that are talked about and that you have up on the bill tracker are going to affect current federal employees, and it will affect primarily people who don't work for the government yet.
I think that's interesting. I think that we've also talked in the newsroom, though, about whether or not we're going to see cut, well, the exact opposite. Hmm. Are we going to see another bill come out where they're using federal pensions to pay for something? You know, there's another bill out there right now. It was initially part of the House Transportation Bill. They've separated it out. And it's going to be voted on separately, but it would do a lot. It would increase federal pension contributions 1.5% for all feds. Mm-hmm. And under this current situation, they could do that because these current feds have not been affected by the legislation, by the payroll tax cut deal that was just passed. Mm-hmm. So I think we may start to see more slicing and dicing, and how can we do all these different things to pay for things.
I think, Diane, we might see more attempts to do what Julia's talking about. Mm-hmm. But as long as you have a democratically controlled Senate who is predisposed anyway toward protecting federal employees, and where one senator, Senator Cardin, for example, can put a stop to anything and force something into a negotiation, not a conference committee necessarily, but just into a negotiation, I think it's going to be really hard for any of this to change. And, of course, the Senate can't change until next January.
Right. So I agree with you. I think that new feds coming in, the very few that are coming in, will be transparent to them. I mean, it sounds on the surface very reasonable to have a 3.1% contribution. Let's face it, over the years, CSRS was 8% or 7% rather contribution for the defined benefit.
So that was without the TSP, though, right?
Without the TSP, that was strictly for the pension. Mm-hmm. So that was a sizable chunk. Granted, it's a very nice retirement, but I think given the fact that in the private sector, we know that this is pretty much what happens in the private sector, and you've got Social Security as a part of it, and you've got God lift Social Security and let's hope it survives, but you've also got the TSP. I think that is a reasonable amount for existing feds to come in. I agree with you that in this election year, there will not be any touch to current feds, but I don't take it off the table. I think it's absolutely possible current feds will be affected.
Well, and it's also in the president's budget request as well. And I think that's one difference. You know, in the president's budget request this year, while he's calling for the 0.5% increase, he's also calling for the 1.5% increase. And, you know, going to raise it 0.4% every year for the next 3 years. So I think there is a chance.
But how many times over the years have we seen the president of either party call for a particular pay increase? And and Congress says, nope, not good enough, and what actually comes out is better. So I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I know it's in there, and I agree maybe we shouldn't completely rule it out. But it just seems to me, again, when you only need one person out of 100 right. to say, nope, can't do that until we change this or that or the other thing, and this can get bargained a little bit. I'm still skeptical.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to happen, at least prior to the election, on current feds.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the proposal and the paying for the payroll tax cut is actually going to happen for the new feds, I think. I'm not sure. I think it was pending. The vote was pending today. And I don't know.
Senate passed it and the House passed
yep.
it.
Yeah, okay. Both passed okay. And not close in either House. I think in either chamber. The Senate, I think, was a 60 to 30-some vote. And the House was in the mid to upper 200s right. to like 130 yeah. or 40 mm-hmm. or something like
it
that.
It would be political suicide for them not to do it, considering the recent news that's been out about the benefits of all the federal employees versus the private sector and how it's 16% more beneficial. The benefits are higher in the federal sector. So I think that, you know, this absolutely was inevitable.
60-36 in the Senate and 293-132
okay.
in the
okay.
House. So neither chamber.
That was today's vote?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So neither chamber challenged there
yeah.
at all. I mean, it was pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty easy to get it through both sides.
Right.
What do we see happening with some of the other things that are floating around out there that weren't part of this deal? The high three to high five and some of the other things that federal employees are worried about. And one of the things that I think is interesting, Tammy Flanagan's on with me from time to time. Causey, of course, I talk to all the time. And they both tell me that the high three to high five is the thing, Diane, that employees are the most concerned about and maybe shouldn't be.
I don't think they should be. For one thing, it's not for the folks that are currently on board. I mean, the CSRS folks that are left, the few that are left, aren't going to be affected by that. And that's the larger, you know, pension, more attractive pension right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the high three to high five is a big issue. I really don't.
Tammy did a calculation not too long ago, and I think she said for a Fed that is in the, I'm trying to remember the numbers, 80,000 plus, that the difference is like six extra months that you'd have to work
yeah.
to make up the difference. Or I think the number was 80 to 100 bucks a month less
right.
that your pension would be.
And we already know that people retire on an average of 5 years after they're eligible.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't see that that's a big deal. I think that's probably something that will happen.
That's one of the provisions in the bill that I was talking to
yes,
you about
right.
the House transportation bill that they pulled out
yeah.
by Dennis Ross.
And that keeps coming up. It'll come up every
yeah.
year, the high three to high five.
Let's take a break and talk about this some more since you've both chosen this issue as the most important federal news story of the week. On the Federal News Countdown with Diane Cochran and Julia Ziegler, we'll wrap up today's Federal News Countdown in a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Agencies don't seem as gung-ho on telework as the White House or lawmakers would have it. Maryland Congressman John Sarbanes and Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly sponsored the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010. They recently asked the Congressional Research Service to find out how agencies are applying the law. Turns out the Department of Veterans Affairs allows just 12% of its employees to telework. Elsewhere, many feds keep going to the office even when they have permission to work from home.
When did you last review your life insurance coverage? WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance to federal employees at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also has a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. WEPA gives its policyholders more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn about all of your options. Again, that's WAEPA.org. The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Hundreds of people have been killed in Libya since last week in clashes between rival tribes over control of territory. Libya's ruling National Transitional Council has not been able to pull the country together since the U.S. military and NATO-led operation that helped to topple the dictator Muammar Gaddafi ended. Violence broke out late last week in the remote town of Al-Kufra and has continued since. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and Defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Looking for a provider you can trust? With a State Department Federal Credit Union credit card, you'll not only earn reward points, but you'll also have one of the lowest credit card rates around. With a low rate and no hidden fees, you'll enjoy all the benefits of owning a credit card without the high cost to you. Plus, earn one reward point for every dollar you spend. Points can be redeemed for travel, dining, appliances, and more. Call 1-800-296-8882 or visit sdfcu.org to learn more. Unlock the rewards today.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories as chosen by Diane Cochran and by Julia Ziegler, and both of them choosing stories having to do with changes to the federal pension as a result of the payroll tax cut extension deal that has now passed both the Senate and the House, and the National Journal, among others, reporting President Obama says he'll sign the bill as soon as he can. He's not in town now, I don't think. I think he's either coming back to Washington or just recently back. So I don't know if it'll be today or early next week that bill will get his signature or not. But I guess the best news possible out of this is that it doesn't impact people who work for the government now. And we've talked about the potential consequences of that. What's the next logical extension, though, do you think, either one of you, of this conversation about pension? Do you think we'll stay focused on pension, or is that such a small part of the overall benefits package that employees have that maybe somebody else will get some other bright idea? You look at the bill tracker every day, Julie. What do you see on there that might pop up next?
Well, there's lots of things on here. I mean, obviously, you've got about three or four different bills out there right now that deal with the pay freeze alone. One that would extend it through 2013, one through 2014, one through 2015. So you've got the pay freeze. You also have, as we were talking about earlier, bills that would cut the workforce through attrition. And then you have more bills that deal with any kind of cuts to or changes to the pension system. So I guess that's why when we were talking in the last segment, looking at something like this where there are all these bills, I just wonder if something else will stick, mm-hmm. You know, and what it will be. Maybe we're not so sure yet, but I wonder if something is more likely to stick now in these times, in these economic times, when money is top of mind, than it would have a few years ago.
Now, Diane, you've got a lot of experience in DOD, and the president's asking for a 1.7% increase for uniform personnel, 0.5% for civilian personnel. How closely do those track over the years? It seems to me, just thinking about it anecdotally, that a lot of times the case is made, well, the uniforms are getting this, so we should get the same number for the civilians as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's quite the mindset these days in the federal workforce and DOD. I think the DOD workforce is a very committed workforce, and they understand the push that happened maybe 15 or 20 years ago to have the non-combatant roles in the Department of Defense go into the civilian sector. So, you know, it's kind of been up and down. Sometimes the military and the uniform presence will raise, and sometimes the civilian presence will raise. But I think they balance out very well. My bigger concern is being able to recruit to fill the attrition that we know is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Fed bashing and the morale is that mm-hmm. low, and I really don't think pensions are going to be an issue for people on recruitment, but I think retention is a huge issue and attracting folks to come to work for the government.
Well, and you guys were you and I were talking about before the show began about how, you know, when we are in times of tight budgets, recruiting money is going to go out the window first. You know, mm-hmm. that's something that the agencies are going to cut first. So if you're not out there, you're not in front of people, you're not in front of young people. I was telling Diane, I never even thought about the federal government as a potential employer where, you know, I'm the kind of person that, you know, very mission driven,
mm-hmm.
That would be great in the federal government, but because of where I grew up, because there were no recruiting efforts in my area, wasn't even a thought in my mind.
I'll tell you what makes me optimistic about recruiting, Diane. It's a conversation I had with an HR official that doesn't know anything at all about the government, but I just for the sake of argument, I went on the Bill Tracker, which is excellent, by the way, and linked up on federalnewsradio.com. I wrote down all of the potential bad things that we think are bad for federal employees as the worst case scenario. And I wrote them on a list, and I went up to them and I said, if this was the package that you had to recruit with at your company, how do you think you would do? And he said, we would be in great shape. That's a terrific package. And so that to me was very instructive that at least in the competitive marketplace, mm-hmm. even if all the bad stuff happens and it only happens to people who are coming into the government, it's still not a bad place to be. It's still a pretty good, attractive package.
Here's the other side of
that. Okay.
We have generational differences now from where we were 20 years ago. You may be able to get them in, but can you keep them? Because the cuts are happening in training mm-hmm. and development and
leadership.
And once you get them in the door, you may keep them 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. and they'll be gone. There's no sense of I'm going to have a career in the federal government anymore.
Uh-huh.
So we've got to work harder in the federal government to make sure that we retain the people that we recruit.